Parents tuned to yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Comedy coming up in this hour. Later on, the Judy Canova Show from 1944, a relatively rare broadcast. But right now, it's the Fibber McGee and Molly program from NBC, heard on April 13th, 1948. In this episode, a new fire alarm at 79 Wistful Vista.
The Johnson's Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The Johnson's Wax Products for Home and Industry present Fibber McGee and Molly with Bill Thompson, Gail Gordon, Arthur Q. Bryan, and me, Harlow Wilcox. The script is by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie. Music by the Kingsmen and Billy Mills Orchestra. Fibber and Molly join us in a moment. The old saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, certainly is true when it comes to wood floors. Neglected floors soon become so shabby and unattractive that they have to be refinished. And you probably know how much trouble and how expensive it is. But now that the Johnson Electric Floor Polisher is again available, you can have far lovelier floors with far less work. You can forever eliminate the bother and expense of refinishing your floors. All you do is flick the switch of the Johnson Electric Floor Polisher and then just guide it around the room. Why, you can polish every floor in your home in a fraction of the usual time. So plan now to care for your floors the modern, inexpensive way with the Johnson Electric Floor Polisher. For $44.50, you can have one of your own, or you can rent one by the day from your neighborhood dealer. Remember, Johnson's Paste Wax to save your floors and the Johnson Electric Floor Polisher to save you work. They're the perfect combination to bring out the beauty of your home.
Look on the bright side, shine up the right side, bring out the beauty of the home.
The city is installing a new fire alarm box on the corner near the McGee residence. Most people would not consider this a particularly thrilling event, but as the old saying goes, simple pleasures for simple folks. And here is one of Wistful Vista's simpler folks telling his wife about it. As we meet Fibber McGee and Molly.
Well, sir, the minute I seen this guy installing this fire alarm box on our corner, I walks right up to him. Look, bud, I says, in a refined way, I says, put that fire alarm box someplace else, I says. This is a quiet neighborhood, I says, and we don't want fire engines dashing through here all hours of the day and night.
Did he put up much of an argument?
Well, yes. But just between you and me, kiddo, a guy walking towards you with a dirty look in his eye and 12 inches of hot soldering iron don't really need much of an argument. After all, maybe a fire alarm box on our corner won't be so bad. Might be all right.
Good idea. A matter of fact, dearie, the only thing I object to about them is their color. That bright red is so conspicuous.
Well, they have to paint them red. If they paint them green, everybody tries to mail letters in them. No, the color don't bother me. It's the responsibility.
What responsibility?
Well, my gosh, in case there's a fire in the neighborhood, who's the logical guy to run to the corner and pull the alarm? I am. Because who was the air raid warden in this block during the war and still has my armband and helmet and gas mask? Me. And furthermore, you smell something burning?
No.
Me either.
Now, don't you be in too much of a hurry to use the new alarm box theory. The police take a dim view of people turning in false alarms.
Who's turning in any false alarms? My gosh, I know better than that. What do you think I am, an arsonist or something?
The word is arsonist theory. Arson is the crime of setting fire.
I thought arson was turning in false alarms about an invasion from Mars.
No. No, that was arson.
Oh, yeah. What did I say wrong in the first place?
Well, you said arsenic, and that's poison.
Yeah? What do you think a firebug is, a tonic? Anyway, don't worry about me, kiddo. I got too much sense of responsibility to...
Come in. Oh, hello there, Mr. Wimple. McGee, it's Mr. Wimple.
It is? Oh, hi, Wimp, old man.
Hello, folks.
Heard the good news, Mr. Wimple?
Yes. Isn't it wonderful? It's only costing me $300.
$300 to install a fire alarm box?
Fire alarm box?
Yeah.
I don't know anything about a fire alarm box.
Huh?
Mrs. McGee asked me if I'd heard the wonderful news, and I said yes, because I thought she meant about Sweetie Face going to Indiana.
Oh, Weedy Face, that's
my big old wife, yeah.
So Sweetie Face is going away for a while, eh?
Yes. I just took her down to the railroad station. See? Here's her ticket.
Well, heavenly days, did you forget to give her the ticket?
Only her return ticket. Probably won't keep her from coming back, but every little delay helps.
Your wife got friends in Indiana, Wimp?
No. Nor anywhere else that I know of.
This is a business trip, then.
Yes. She was invited to the police chief's convention in Indianapolis to give a jiu-jitsu demonstration.
Oh.
She thinks.
You mean it was a phony invitation?
Yes. Just goes to show that I have friends in Indiana anyway.
Oh, my goodness. What'll she do when she comes back and finds out what you did, Mr. Wimple?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nope. The day she gets back, I start for Indiana.
Well, let's forget about Sweetie Face for a minute.
Yes, let's.
I just wanted to tell you we got a new fire alarm box on our corner, Wimp. You hear about any fires, you just call me up and I'll rush down and pull the box. I'm the logical... You smell something burning?
No.
No.
Me either. As I say, Wimp, anytime you have a little fire, just trot over here and tell me. I'll turn it in for you.
Oh, good. I'm dreadfully afraid of fire anyway.
Oh, are you, Mr. Wimple? Have a bad experience with fire, did you?
Yes. I met Sweetie Face at a fire.
Oh.
At the Boy Scout show.
Yeah?
I was a scoutmaster then and was showing my troop how to jump from a burning building into a net.
Pretty dangerous stuff, Wimp.
Oh, you're so right, Mr. McGee. The very first time I jumped, I bounced out of the net and Sweetie Face caught me.
Oh.
I just didn't know how well off I was in that burning building. Well, I'll let you know if I have a fire, Mr. McGee. Goodbye now.
So long.
Billy Mills and the orchestra and that feathery feeling.
I've just been out on the back porch again, sniffing around. I couldn't smell anything burning. But the minute I do, I'll be down at that alarm box like a cat.
Sweetheart.
Huh?
My mother used to tell me that no marriage was really a success until love ripened into friendship.
Right.
Ours has.
Mm-hmm.
But don't strain it. You just keep your chubby little hands off of that fire alarm box, because I'll try to that.
Come in.
Oh, it's Mr. Williams, the weatherman, McGee. Hello, Mr. Williams.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Hello, McGee.
Hi, Fogg.
A lovely weather we've been having, if you'll pardon my mentioning it.
You guys at the Weather Bureau get pretty smug about a spell of good weather, Foggy. I'd like to inform you that this good weather is partly my doing.
How do you figure that, McGee?
A good question.
Look, you see that barometer on the wall there?
Yes.
You see the little brass knob in the middle of it so he can set the movable hand?
Yes.
Well, I've had that hand set to fair and warmer for 3 weeks.
Thank you.
Oh, well, shucks, forget it. I'm glad to help.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if everybody cooperated like that, Mr. Williams?
Yes. It reminds me of a weather station I once helped to install near Petoskey, Michigan.
Oh, that's just south of Mackinac, ain't it?
Up there, they call it Mackinaw.
Oh, yes. Yes, we drove up there once with friends in their catalog.
So what happened up there, Fogg?
Well, we were compiling data on the weather in the Lake Superior region and had established a weather station in an abandoned lumber camp.
Yes?
And one day, waters started coming into my tent.
Rain waters or river waters?
Herman waters, our cook.
Oh.
He came into the tent waving a cleaver. Immediately, I saw red.
Angry, hmm?
No. I mean, I saw Red Murphy, one of our construction men. He was feeling pretty rocky at the time.
Well, I should think he would with all that excitement going on.
You should think he would what?
Feel kind of rocky.
It wasn't kind of rocky. It was pretty rocky.
Hmm?
Pretty Rocky was our pet bull terrier.
Oh.
He used to feel him every morning to see if he had any foxtails in his ears. Well. As he was feeling pretty rocky, the cook went out again and left in a tizzy.
In a tizzy?
Yes. Yes. That's what we called our old Model T, the Lynn Tizzy.
Oh.
Because it ran best backwards. Anyway, after he'd left in the tizzy, I sat down to dinner and ate heartily.
I suppose hardly was a rabbit you'd been saving for an emergency. I'm beginning to catch on to this, you see.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, Mr. Williams, you said you ate heartily. What was heartily, a rabbit or a chicken?
Yeah.
There must be some misunderstanding here. Eating heartily is an old expression meaning to dine well or thoroughly.
Look, Foggy, as long as you're leaving now, may I ask you one question?
Certainly.
Why is it that when you come in here, you never close the door?
Come to think of it, Mr. Williams, you never do. Why is that?
I am a weatherman, Mrs. McGee, and a weatherman always leaves himself a way out. This is the way out, isn't it? Oh, yes. Yes, of course it is. Good day, probably.
My gosh, I forgot to tell Foggy about the new fire alarm box.
Oh, he'll find it.
I don't want him to find it. If there's any alarms to be turned in around here, I'm the guy that's supposed to...
Hello, Molly.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Say, pal, you free for luncheon tomorrow?
That all depends, Omaha. It's one of them businessmen's barbecues where everybody's busy tying their shoe when the check comes around, except me, because I'm wearing moccasins. No, I ain't free.
What's the occasion, Mr. Wilcox?
Well, a few men around town are getting together in the interest of boys' clubs. You ever have any thoughts on clubs for boys?
Yes, and I'm against them. Hickory switch or a hairbrush now and then, but clubs, no.
Oh, that isn't what I meant, pal. We're discussing membership clubs for boys and clubhouses for them, recreational facilities and all that.
I think that's a wonderful idea, myself.
Oh, yeah, I'm interested in that, Junior. I'll go, but I can't stay long. I'm responsible for all the fires in this neighborhood now, you know.
How's that again?
I says I'm responsible for all the fires in this neighborhood. That's quite a responsibility.
Yeah, I can see how it would be.
Yes,
sure. Can't you hide his matches, Molly?
Well, he doesn't mean he sets fires, Mr. Wilcox, but... There's a new fire alarm box down at the corner, and himself here has appointed himself marshal.
Yes, sir, and it's a job that requires alertness and integrity, and... You smell anything burning?
Nope.
No.
Me either. Well, anyway, you can see how I feel about this responsibility, Omaha.
Certainly. I'm in much the same position.
What do you mean, Mr. Wilcox?
Well, I mean it's my business to protect homes, too, but not against fire. I sell Johnson's Wax, which protects against scratches, fingerprints, and Mars dust, and dirt, and damp.
Yeah, but that ain't exactly what we...
You see, good housekeepers are practically unanimous about Johnson's Wax.
Yeah, but what...
On account of the way it simplifies housekeeping and gives their homes that air of gleaming hospitality and shining cleanliness.
McGee thought that in case of an alarm, why...
There isn't any cause for alarm when your precious things are guarded against the elements with Johnson's Wax.
Yeah, but we were...
Your fine woodwork, floors, furniture, picture frames, luggage, lampshades, window sills.
We were talking about fire.
And if I remember correctly,
oh.
The number of smart housewives who use Johnson's Wax is
waxing.
Growing every...
pardon me, Mr. Waxy.
Yes, Molly.
Look, Junior, about this luncheon tomorrow, what's your interest in this boys' club stuff?
Oh, didn't you know? Well, it's part of the Boys' Clubs of America campaign against juvenile delinquency.
Oh?
I'm a volunteer deputy probation officer. And you could be one, too.
Oh, no, not me, boy. I'm no snooper. You don't catch me peeking in windows and sniffing around people's basements.
What are you talking about, pal? We don't do anything like that.
I should say not. Probation officers do splendid work, McGee.
Probation? Oh, my gosh, I thought he said prohibition. I'll be there, Omaha.
Well, just ask my cousin, Big Delinquent Wilcox, about your reservation.
Oh, yeah.
So long, Molly.
You know, I can just see Mr. Wilcox, if his house ever catches fire, getting his Johnson's Wax out of the house and then going back after his wife.
Yeah. Yeah, he reminds me of the way my pop used to be about a job he had when me and him worked at the popcorn works in Peoria.
McGee, you never told me about working at the popcorn works.
I never mentioned the job Pop and I had at the Peoria Pop and Popcorn Plant.
You never did.
Well, boy, I will. You see, Pop was head popcorn popper at the Peoria Pop and Popcorn Plant, and I used to love to watch Pop pop popcorn. Because Pop was a pip with a popcorn popper, and the popcorn he popped was popcorn plus. I worked over in the pop department myself, see, and every afternoon I'd pop into the popcorn department with a pitcher full of pop for Pop. And we'd sit there popping popcorn by the popperful, poking it into our pusses and pushing it down with a pitcher of pop till Pop and I were almost pooped from the pop. Popping the popcorn, pouring the pop, poking the popcorn, pushing the pop, poking the pip and the popcorn down.
Whoa!
Yes, thank goodness.
Oh, it's Dr. Gamble, McGee. Hello, doctor. Come right in.
Thank you, my dear. And good day to you, Marblehead.
Hi, Stork Chaser. How's everything down at the swab shop these days?
Everything is status quo, thank you.
Status quo, doctor?
Yes, that's a Latin expression meaning leave the patient lay there till we look it up in the book. We always try... What are you peeking out the window for, Crumble Skull? You neighbors moving in with a better lawnmower than yours?
No, and Foggy Williams' lawnmower's good enough for me. I'm just keeping an eye on that new fire alarm box down on the corner, Doc. You see, in case a fire starts, I'm the logical guy in this neighborhood to turn
Listen,
in the alarm.
Listen, Butterfingers.
Huh?
During the past month, I have taken care of four different firemen who were badly injured while answering false alarms.
Yeah, but what that...
If I ever hear of you sticking one grimy little knuckle into an alarm box without a $40 million blaze in a dynamite factory within 9 feet of you, I'll personally look you up, lock you up, and experiment with a few new surgical techniques I've wanted to try out. Understand?
I think you made yourself quite clear, Doctor.
Listen here, you barrel-bottomed cow-town Kildare. Before you start yammering at anybody for not having any responsibility, you better take a look at your own conscientious. Any supposedly reputable physician who has to operate in disguise ain't to be trusted.
In disguise?
You heard me. I've seen you coming out of that operating room at the hospital with a mask over your face. You're an old fool, boy. Six doctors standing around an unconscious patient, and not even the nurses know which one is which.
Now, silly, McGee. They have to wear masks and gowns for antiseptic reasons.
Don't explain it to him, Molly. He's the type who cures warts with stump water and braided horsehair.
Oh, yeah. Shows what you know about medicine, you big pony. Stump water's no good for warts. That's for curing rheumatism. For taking off warts. Oh, you taking off warts?
Yes, I have a tonsillectomy coming up.
Oh.
Looks like a difficult case.
Oh, I thought removing tonsils was a rather routine operation, Doctor.
Well, it is, ordinarily. But this patient is just over here from Russia, and I can't convince him it's safe to open his mouth.
So long, Silver.
The King's Man and the Fireman's Bride.
Fireman Charlie McGee, who married in June, wants to be free. He bought a handsome love nest, but his high-flying spouse likes the firehouse. She wears a crimson skirt,
a fireman's hat, a red flannel shirt.
Whee! Clang goes the bell and she's off. Boys in a cloud of confusion and dirt.
Come on, boys, there's a bar.
The fireman's bride won't stay home by her fireside. From all accounts, she'd rather bounce in a fireman's nest. She leaps to the engine and clings to the hose. How she hangs on, nobody knows. Out comes the net and then over she goes. High up they throw her while she hollers,
woo!
Fireman's bride, the fireman confides, as the fireman goggle eyes, high as a kite, ain't she a sight, naughty fireman's bride. Oh, the fireman's bride, won't stay home by her fireside. From all accounts, she'd rather bounce in the fireman's neck. Engine and clings to the hose. How she hangs on, nobody knows. Out comes the net and then over she goes. High up they throw her while she hollers.
Woo!
The fireman drives, people confide. Has the fireman goggle eyes? High as a kite, ain't she a sight? Roaring around all over town with the fireman's bride.
Charlie, wait for baby.
Molly, just take a look out this window here. That little fire alarm box looks mighty solid sitting there guarding this neighborhood.
Now, for goodness sakes, you get your mind off of that alarm box. Huh? I don't want anything to do with that.
Oh, that's a wrong attitude, kiddo. Everybody ought to know about fire alarms. Here, you know what we ought to do? Come on down to the corner with me. Let me show you what to do in case of an emergency.
Oh, I don't think
so. Come on, Molly. You ought to know these things. My gosh. You're liable to get a call from somebody up the block sometime that a fire is busted out, and when that happens, you just run down here to this corner.
Oh,
see?
Wait a minute, dearie. Here comes the old-timer. Hello, Mr. Old-timer.
Hello there, kids.
Hi, old-timer. Hey, have you seen it yet?
Johnny, these tired old eyes have saw everything. I've saw generals run for president and the president run for the generals. I gave Admiral Peary a boost when he shinnied up the North Pole. I unbuttoned Napoleon's coat when he got his hand caught in it. I was right there when Livingston was finally found by Jack Benny. I've saw pretty ankles getting on stagecoaches, cotton stockings getting on horse cars, dimpled knees getting on buses, and just yesterday a girl showed her ankle again climbing into a constellation. Have I seen what, Johnny?
This new fire alarm box right here on the corner. Anytime you have a fire at your place, just give me a ring and I'll run down here and turn in the alarm.
He's just appointed himself official fire watcher for this block, Mr. Oldtimer.
Is that so?
Yep.
Well, that's a very interesting hobby. I used to love to watch fires myself when I was a kid, kids.
When you were a kid, kids, fire hadn't even been invented yet.
Oh, that's so, Johnny. I remember one night I was sleeping and somebody bellowed fire and I leapt out of bed, yanked a pair of pants on, dashed out the door and run clean down to the stockyards bow-legged.
My gosh, why'd you run bow-legged?
The pants I had on was Papa's coat, Johnny. And to top it all off, by the time I got to the fire, it was out.
Where was the fire?
Our house. Papa put it out with a bottle of seltzer, daughter.
Seltzer, eh? That's pretty quick thinking, all right.
Yep, you would have put it out sooner, too, only you kept stopping to throw a twist of lemon peel into it. The whole thing upset Mama pretty bad.
I should think it would upset her.
Yep, and the excitement of the folding bed slammed shut with her in it. Nobody missed her till time for breakfast. Then we pulled the bed down, and there was Mama, sound asleep, standing on her head.
No kidding. Your mother must have been a pretty headstrong woman.
That's pretty good, Johnny, but that ain't the way I heard it. Well, I heard it, one feller says to t'other feller, says, he says, you see where Dewey threw his hat in the ring in Wisconsin? No, says t'other feller. What happened? Well, says the first feller, they picked it up, dusted it off, and handed it back to him. I'll call you if my jokes get any hotter, Johnny. So long.
Hey, what's the door slam for? We're standing out here on the corner.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. That's better.
Now, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. In case of a fire, here's all you do, Tootsie. So you run down here to this little box, see, and you yank this door open, see?
Is that all?
No, then you reach in here where this little hook is, you see, and you yank it down like this.
Oh, no, don't, Mickey.
Now, what you mean? I'm just showing you how in case of an emergency. Oh, my gosh. I did it.
You did it.
I turned in an alarm. Oh, I didn't mean to, Molly. I was just showing you how... Oh, what are we going to do?
Now. You better call the fire department on the phone. Oh. Tell them it was a mistake. Tell them that you...
Yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll call... Oh, already?
Fire engine.
Listen.
Now what?
Oh, brother, am I in trouble. And after all Doc said about it. If those guys come out here and after me turn in that alarm, something better be burning. Hey, Molly, is our house on fire by any stroke of luck?
Heavenly days, no. What a thought.
Well, there's just one thing to do then. I got some matches. Come on, kiddo. I got some matches. Quick, hand me another match. This doggone thing don't want to burn.
Oh, dear, I feel terribly guilty, McGee.
What do you mean, guilty? I got a right to set fire to my own rubbish pile in my own backyard, haven't I? Or get 40 years in the pokey for accidentally turning in a false alarm, haven't I?
Well, can't you just explain to the fireman that it was a mistake?
With the reputation I got around this town, nobody'd believe me in a minute. Ah, now she started. Now it's burning. Ah, that's the stuff.
Here they come, McGee. Up the alley.
Well, let them come, kiddo. This is a fire. I'm legal. They can't send anything to me, by far. Yeah.
Here it is, fireman. Here's the fire.
Yeah, down here.
Just a rubbish pile, Mike. Here with the extinguisher.
Yeah.
Well, you got a little blaze, have you, mister?
Yeah.
Lucky we happened to be passing, saw the smoke.
Yes, we turned in the alarm.
It took you guys long enough to get here, too. My gosh, if my house was... Hey, what do you mean you happened to be passing? I turned in the alarm right down at the corner.
At the corner? You mean that box we just put in?
That's the one.
Oh, that box isn't connected yet, ma'am.
Isn't connected yet? You mean...
No, Mike and I are just cruising around selling tickets for the Fireman's Benefit Dance Saturday night. $5 a couple. How many do you want?
How many you got with you?
Well...
We'll take them.
Yeah.
Fibber and Molly return in a moment.
Car owners, listen to this amazing offer. A handy, soft, fleecy woolen car dusting mitt of 49-cent value is yours at no extra cost. Your handy dusting mitt will be attached to the can. There's no extra charge. The mitt is yours with a can of Johnson's Carnu.
Ladies and gentlemen, next Thursday, Fibber and Molly will be in Collegeville, Indiana, to receive honorary LLD degrees from St. Joseph's College. This is in recognition of the consistent acceptability of their radio material in your homes, as shown by the nationwide radio acceptance poll of college students. Molly, I'd like to congratulate you on your success. And, pal, same to you.
Well, thanks, Junior. We may not be a complete success, but we're getting there.
By degrees.
Yeah.
Good night, all.
Good night.
The makers of Johnson's Wax Products, Racing Wisconsin, bring you Fibber, McGee, and Molly each week at this time. Be with us again next Tuesday night, won't you?
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
This is WMAQ, NBC in Chicago.
Fibber, McGee, and Molly on Tuned to Yesterday from April 13th, 1948 on NBC. You're listening to an hour of old-time radio comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, many programs from the early to mid-1940s have not survived the test of time, mostly due to the war effort, where scrap metals and the cost of recording was very high. Many radio stations played their part by donating these materials to make bullets, tanks, and guns. To that end, any broadcast really from 1944 is a rarity in and of itself, which we have next of the Judy Canova program. In that same year, she was in two guest spots on the Mail Call series, singing her version of Shortening Bread, and on the Abbott and Costello show, where the story was based around Lou Costello marrying Judy. This next broadcast was heard in between those two shows on March 21st, 1944, on CBS.
For a breath that's sweet. For a breath that's sweet and a smile that dazzles, it's Colgate Tooth Powder. And for a riot of fun, it's America's wacky, wistful, wonderful scatterbrain, Judy Canova.
Howdy, folks, howdy. Well, sir, last night I made one of my regular trips to the Hollywood canteen. Yeah, you should order to see them soldiers crowd around me. I sure had what they wanted. Dorothy Lamour on one arm and Ann Sheridan on the other. You know, some of the fellas thought I was going to give a puppet show, because when I walked in, they said, "Here comes Punchy Judy." But I served sandwiches and coffee. Yeah, that's the only way I could get a fella to hold my hand, was to put it between two slices of bread. The soldiers and the sailors at the canteen can't date any of the girls that meet there. At least that's the excuse they gave me. There's one aviator there that was giving me the eye, and he kept looking at my legs. So I finally asked him, I says, "Do you think my legs is pretty?" He said, "Legs? I thought they was wind socks at half mast." But my granny, my little old granny, come along with me, and she told me that the reason that none of the servicemen go for me is because I ain't got a military manner. She says my flank movement looks like a disorderly retreat. But I felt so patriotic after last night that this afternoon I went down and volunteered for the Women's Ambulance Corps. And they asked me if I was willing to go right out on the firing line and pick up a man. Listen, as short as men are in Hollywood, I'd go through cannon fire to pick up Boris Karloff.
And here is Judy to start off the musical portion of the program with "Milkman, Keep Those Bottles Quiet." Charles Dant and the orchestra furnish the accompaniment.
Jumping on the swing shift all night, turning out my quota. All right, now I'm beat right down to the side, and I've got to dig myself some knots. Oh, milkman, keep those bottles quiet. Now the noise of the riveter, I don't mind, because the man with the whiskers has a thud behind it. But I can't keep punching with that victory crew when you're making me punch you with that bottle move. Hold to give my own if I'm gonna give it, but I gotta get my should I if I'm gonna rivet it. So say loud, but with that milk barrage, cause it's unpatriotic, it's a sabotage. Milkman, stop that grade A riot. Talk cut out if you can't lullaby it. Oh, milkman, keep those bottles quiet. I've been knocking out a fat tank all day, working on a bomber. Okay, boy, you blast my wick with those twinks, and I've got to get my 40 winks. So, milkman, keep those bottles quiet. Milkman, keep those bottles quiet. Milkman, keep those bottles quiet.
Boy, do hush.
Geranium.
Honey, I feel terrible. I just got a letter from my boyfriend, Pomeroy.
Yeah, well, what's the matter?
Well, they done transferred him to the South Pacific. You know, on the way over, the pilot told Pomeroy that he'd sunk a Jap cruiser. How did the pilot know he had?
His bomber done told him. Say, but honey, he did tell me about them new automatic rifles. Yeah, he said them things sure shoots awful fast. Why, they shoot so fast that it fires 12 bullets before you didn't know it was loaded. Uh-oh. Honey, here comes Misery. That Mr. Carter, our new boarder.
Come in. Oh, good morning, Mr. Carter. It's a lovely morning, ain't it? The trees are beginning to bud, the pansies is in bloom, the hyacinths is in bloom.
Yeah, and whose early bloomers are those hanging on the line back of my cabin?
Well, it was none of your business, sir. Them's mine.
Well, you better take them down. Bunch of kids think it's a circus tent and they're trying to sneak in.
Oh, well, don't let little kids annoy you, Mr. Carter. You know, after all, boys will be boys.
Well, I'm not worrying about the kids. But some barker has opened a sideshow on the left leg. Well, I didn't come down here to pass the time of day. What I want to know is, when do I get some clean sheets? When are you going to give me some extra blankets?
Well, Mr. Carter,
young
I
lady,
tell you...
always remember that to make a success of any business, you've got to work, work, and work. Of course, it isn't any time at all before you grow old, your looks are gone, you're a has-been. So work while you're young.
Mr. Carter, do you think I'll lose my looks when I grow old?
If you're lucky. Young lady, why aren't you married?
Well, sir, I'm just a mere slip of a girl. I'm too young. I'm still at the convalescent age.
Well, another thing, why do you always go around telling everybody you're only 18?
Well, why should I confess to 22 when I'm only 25? But speaking real serum-like, though, I can get all the fellas I want. Why, I remember once that three fellas proposed to me, Percival, Albert, and Dewey, but I turned them all down. Well, sir, them three fellas was so downhearted that Percival took poison, Albert took gas,
and Dewey took Manila. Young lady, you have no breeding. Now, I am a man of culture.
You sure are.
Honey, he is a man of culture.
Oh, I thought he said vulture.
you have no éclat, no sang-froid, no savoir-faire.
Listen here, never mind that imported stuff. You're lucky to get a drink of anything these days.
Oh, I give up. All I want from you, young lady, is quick, efficient service and plenty of it. And good day to you.
You know, honey, a man as nasty as Mr. Carter ought to be fighting the enemy. Say, honey, how come he ain't in the army?
Well, he's 5B.
5B? What in the world is that?
Well, that's bifocals, ball head, bridge work, bay window, and bunions. Oh, hello, Mr. Niles and Sylvester.
Greetings and salutations. And all that sort of stuff, Miss Judy. Say, why is your brow all puckered?
Yes, what goes on here, Judy?
Oh, Mr. Carter was in here raising Cain with us about the service and stuff. Gee, I wish he'd never come here at all. Can't we think of some way to make him leave?
Oh, let's forget about Carter. Say, how about a little poker, huh?
Well, idea. Okay, you deal.
All right. You know, whenever I start to play cards, I always think of Colgate tooth powder.
Oh, shucks. I knew I was going to get sucked into a sales talk about Colgate tooth powder. Well, why does Colgate tooth powder remind you of card games?
Well, you can't get a better deal anywhere when it comes to a dentifrice that will reveal all the natural brilliance of your teeth.
The deuce, you say?
Yes, that's right, Sylvester. Just get a toothbrush, sprinkle liberally with Colgate tooth powder, and poker in your mouth and start brushing away.
Okay, that's enough. Now, let's auntie.
Yes, your auntie and your uncle will have a breath that's sweet if you'll just remember to use Colgate tooth powder night and morning and before every date.
Well, let's start playing. Now, what's the limit?
Oh, there's no limit to the queens you can draw if you have a pleasing breath. And scientific tests have definitely proved that in 7 cases out of 10, Colgate tooth powder removes oral unpleasing breath instantly.
Oh, shuffling succotash! Come on, Niles, get your chips down.
Yes, Sylvester, when the chips are down, you'll be a winner every time if you use Colgate tooth powder night and morning and before every day. Do this, and I'll promise you a breath that's sweet and a smile that dazzles. Remember the name, Colgate tooth powder.
Come in.
Pardon me, but do you have an aspirin?
Yes, I have.
Well, for goodness sake, take it. You look terrible.
Where do all these silly Valley people come from. Mr. Niles, will you please introduce Eddie's song?
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, Eddie Dean, our baritone, sings his version of I'll Take You Home Again, Kathleen.
I'll take you home again, Kathleen, across the ocean wild and wide, to where your heart has ever been, since first you were my bonny bride. The roses all have left your cheek, I've watched them fade away and die. Your voice is sad whene'er you speak, and tears bedimmed your loving eyes. Oh, I will take you back, Kathleen, to where your heart will feel no pain, and when the fields are fresh and green, oh, I'll take you to your home again.
Thanks, Eddie. That was swell. I certainly welcome that music after talking to that Mr. Carter. Come in.
Pardon me for talking in your face, Senorita.
Oh, hello, Pedro. Where have you been?
I was over to the post office, and on the way back, I took a shortcut through the woods. And you know, Senorita, you see a lot of strange little animals in the woods. I saw two little worms talking.
Oh, stop, Pedro. Two worms talking.
See, Senorita, one worm says to the other, hello, babe, how about a date? The other worm says, quit kidding, I'm your other hand.
Pedro, I don't believe a word of it.
Oh, a funny thing happened to me, too. I was walking along and all of a sudden I step on a skunk. Boy, was he surprised. The second surprise was on me.
Pedro. Listen, what were you doing this morning with Mr. Carter?
That is what I came to complain about, Senorita. He took me hunting with him this morning.
Well, what's wrong with that?
Senorita, I want you to make him buy a dog.
Why?
Well, I get awful tired swimming out and bringing back the dead dogs in my mouth.
Pedro, what is that package you have?
Oh, that's for you, Senorita. They gave him to me at the post office. Here.
Oh, good. I've been expecting that. Thanks. You can go now.
Senorita, could I have the day off to visit my sister? She had quadruplets last week.
Quadruplets? Gee, four little babies. What's their names?
Eeny, meeny, miny, and Manuelo.
No, you mean eeny, meeny, miny, and Mo.
No, Senorita, my sister says she don't want any more.
You may leave now.
Hasta luego.
Hasta lumbago to you too, Pedro. Gee, now to open this package. The Invisible Detective Agency. We teach you to be a detective by mail. Gosh, if I can only learn to be a detective, I can follow Mr. Carter and see what he does for a living. Geranium! Oh, Geranium!
Come in, honey. You calling me, honey?
Yeah, look, Geranium. That detective course I sent away first come by mail. Now we can follow Mr. Carter and find out what he does.
Say, did I tell you I was down there in his cabin this morning? Yeah, and when I got done making the bed, I thought I'd look in that little old black bag he's got. And suddenly he sneaks up behind me and sticks a gun in my ribs.
He stuck a gun in your ribs? What was he trying to do, hide it?
Uh-uh.
Hey, you must have looked funny. A .45 pistol in a .52 waist.
But honey, I'm serious. He told me to get out or he'd shoot me full of holes.
Well, listen, did you get to see what was in the black bag?
Yeah, honey. And you know something? That man ain't no doctor. No, there was all kind of tools in there, like burglars use. Yes, sir, he must be a burglar or a spy.
Well, we'll find out. Look here what it says here on this paper cover. Follow our course studiously, and you will become a gizzard, a wizard at shadowing people. In no time at all, you can be a first-class slinker. That ain't a T, is it?
I don't know, honey. Say, what else did it say? This is exciting. Read me some more.
You better read it to me, Geranium. Right there where it says Lesson 1.
All right, honey. It says, how to become a human bloodhound. Get down on all fours on the rug and look for clues. Crawl along and sniff the rug like a bloodhound.
All right, now I'm on my hands and knees. Now I'll sniff like a bloodhound.
What was that, honey?
Shucks, met another bloodhound. Gosh, Geranium, I'm going to give this detecting up. I'll never be a detective. Why, I was 5 years old before I could find my own toes.
Oh, now, honey, quit talking like that. You was a smart little child. Oh, you know you your papa's pet.
Yeah, he couldn't afford a dog. Dear old Pappy. Now, every night, Pappy would take me on his knee and sing me a lullaby. Gosh, now that all the years have gone by, I still remember Pappy's lullabies. Geranium, what's the second course of Mademoiselle from Armentieres?
Oh, let's forget your baby days, Miss Judy, and consecrate on this here detective stuff. Let's see now. It says here, when given a third degree, use kindness. You'll attain better results. Remember, be kind.
That gives me an idea. Now, Geranium, you are a prisoner that has committed a crime.
Who, me?
Yep, you. Now, you sit down there in that chair. Now, I'm a detective, and I'll start a question you.
All right.
Geranium Jones, did you steal that watch?
I ain't saying, Mr. Policeman. You can't get nothing out of me.
Oh, so you won't talk, eh? Treat the prisoner with kindness. All right, you won't talk, eh? Then you must eat this chocolate eclair with whipped cream.
Oh, no, no, Miss Judy, I can't do that. Don't make me eat that, honey.
Gotta use force, huh? Well, I'll stuff it down your mouth. There.
I told you, honey, there goes my girdle.
Miss Judy.
Eddie, you are speaking to Judy Canova, detective. Here's my card.
I don't see any card.
Shucks, I'm a magician, too. State your case, Eddie, my boy.
Miss Judy, this is serious. I was passing cabin 8 a second ago, and I heard 2 shots.
Oh, shucks, that ain't nothing. Pappy used to take a couple of shots before dinner every night.
These were revolver shots, Miss Judy. I think the fellow in that cabin shot his wife.
Well, gosh, what do we do?
Honey, here's a chance to try out them things you learned from the detective book.
Okay, I'll broil him.
Honey, you mean grill him.
Broil or grill, I'll make him hot under the collar. Lead the way, Eddie.
Come on.
Gosh, if I make good, I can see my name right now over the door. Judy Canova, the crinima, the crime, but the crinoline, the... Gosh, Judy Canova, policeman.
Here's a cabin right here, Miss Judy, number 8.
I'll take over, Eddie. Now watch me solve the crime. Open up there, fella. This is Detective Canova.
Put the cuffs on me. Put them on. I'll confess. I did it.
Mister, why did you kill your wife?
She tortured me. She tortured me. She tortured me.
Oh, you poor, poor man. You poor, poor man. You poor, poor. Tell me your story.
I couldn't stand it any longer. She kept insisting that we save our money for a rainy day. That drove me mad. Her, always talking about a rainy day. Rain, rain. I had to kill her.
But why?
I'm a member of the Los Angeles Chamber of Commerce.
And now here's Judy with another song. This one is called It Makes No Difference Now.
Makes no difference now what kind of life fate hands me. I'll get along without you now, that's plain to see. I don't care what happens next, for I'll get by somehow. I don't worry, 'cause it makes no difference now. It was just a year ago when I first met you. I learned to love you, and I thought you'd love me too. But that's all in the past, and I'll forget somehow. I don't worry, 'cause it makes no difference now. Thank you.
let things happen as they will, and I'll get by somehow. I don't worry, 'cause it makes no difference now. Well, folks, I solved my first big case as a detective. Now to trail Mr. Carter and find out what he really is. I'll be practicing all next week, and I'll meet you all back here at the motel. And say, by the way, we'll be entertaining the Douglas Aircraft workers from the Civic Auditorium in Long Beach, California. So try and meet us all there. This is simply yours, Judy Canova in Hollywood, saying thanks a lot and
good night, soldier, wherever you may be. My heart's lonely without you. Good night, soldier.
Remember, for a breath that's sweet and a smile that dazzles, it's Colgate tooth powder.
Good night, Chet.
Ken Niles saying, see y'all next Tuesday. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Judy Canova Show, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 21st, 1944 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of comedy on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.